Hello, and welcome along to the first in a new series of the Never Knowingly Understood podcast, produced by the Colchester Arts Centre, which is your essential guide to all the fabulous shows right here in the heart of Colchester. My name is Tim Morgan, one of the many volunteers here at Colchester Arts Centre. You can find the Never Knowingly Understood podcast on Spotify or indeed your chosen podcast platform. And don't forget to subscribe whilst you're there. And if you want more, which you clearly will, there'll be an extended version available with interviews, music, and probably some more waffling on Mixcloud. Just search for the Never Knowingly Understood and prepare to be sent into a blissful state of rapture. First of all, we start with a rare interview with local legend Mr. Martin Newell, recorded at his house in a secret location in Wivenhoe. I was accompanied on this assignment by Nina from the Colchester Arts Centre to make sure that I didn't break anything or indeed faint. And I started by asking Martin about when he first got involved with the Colchester Arts Centre.
I think I first played there in 1983, and I think I've even got pictures of it. It was a rather ill-appointed art centre. It had a little bookshop in it. The people who managed it didn't really have a lot of money. It was usually one nice guy, and he just was anything to put people in there. And there's lots of benefits, people who needed to do benefits for beleaguered countries, like the equivalent of Ukraine now or something, yeah. Or some South American country. There was a woman called Oriel. I don't know what happened to her, but she was around. She was forever putting on benefits, and she'd just get the musicians, could you do something? It was before I did poetry. Mm. And I could just about play the piano then. And I'd go around and I'd play the piano for a bit in a break or do a couple of songs. Yeah, it would have been about 1983, I suppose. And then sporadically I'd play there. And then when, I really can't remember the bloke who was managing it before Anthony. He was a nice guy, but just no money. And there was a conglomerate, a company of musicians, Mick the Hippies Band. They were called the Curious Band. And Mick decided, he is part of the tapestry of that place. Right. Mick decided that he would like to get a group of people together to do Hawkwind Space Ritual in its entirety. And he got a group of some music students and sundry other weirdos, the kind of people who are attracted towards completely free-form music. And he got Roddy Ashworth. Because like, none of them could sing. They were like jazz musicians. Nobody mm-hmm. wanted to sing. So you got Roddy Ashworth, who was in an indie band called Joe Orton's Trousers, to do the singing bits. And then, I have no idea why, because I wasn't a poet. I wasn't known as a poet this time. I think they just knew I liked poetry. They asked me to do the Robert Calvert parts and to read the bits. And on the seventh day, there was a broken pair of shades on the tarmac and all the rest of it. So I said, yeah, okay, because I'd stopped with music. I'd become a gardener again because I'd had a really bad time, so I was having a very rare break. Mm. And I remember I got this doll dummy's head where I did it up a bit and put a wig on it and stuffed it in there so it looked like I had two heads. So I was this AFOD Beeblebrox thing and stood in the pulpit and recited these poems. And the thing took off. There's a chapter about it in the Greatest Living Englishman book. But it went really well and it raised some money. And then Roger, who was a very bumptious 20-year-old, said, called me into his office because he had an office at 20 years at Student Union. And he said, look, I'd like to do Ziggy Stardust in its entirety, like we did, but you know, Mick wouldn't want to do that, but some of the other guys would. And would you be interested in that? I said, what for? I looked at the job. I said, what? Because you're an old glam rocker. Well, I mean, I was 36, which was quite substantially older. I regarded it as ancient. I dare say they did. But I looked at it like an old builder, stepped back a bit and sort of looked at the job. But, ooh, you're going to need, you know, two really good guitars, one concert level piano player. You're going to need a good drummer. You're going to need this. You're going to need that. And he said, I can find that. I went, yeah. And then a week later, he was running back and said, well, I've got everyone. Let's start rehearsing. We began to learn this thing. We learned Space Oddity and salient things around the Ziggy Stardust period, leading up to quite a few bits of Aladdin Sane, and put the Ziggy Stardust show together and called ourselves Moon Age Productions. And it filled the place out again, twice, two nights running. So the Art Centre had some money then, which meant we could keep it going because it was on the brink of closure. And suddenly a mixture of Colchester Council, and they decided to get a manager, and this guy Anthony Roberts came in, who Roddy just said was the enemy, because Roddy said, you know, he was going to change everything and ruin everything, and he got me to write a little speech saying there seems to be a chill, after all the work we've done, there seems to be a chill wind of accountancy whizzing through the place. And I mean, I wasn't antipathetic to him. I wasn't anti him, but Roddy really was. He just, he was like the Antichrist. So Roddy took me and Tiv, the normally mild-mannered Tiv, as a sort of small delegation. We just said, oh, I thought we were just going to talk to Anthony, but Roddy went in there completely over the top, pointing and saying, you, Anthony Roberts, I've done all this. And Anthony's like, what, me? Can you imagine?
And, I think they're friends now, aren't they?
Yeah, but it took some years. But I knew Anthony was all right, because at that time, I got my first break and I went down to do Loose Ends. And Anthony was on the station, on the Liverpool Street, on the concourse, coming back from somewhere where he was from London, I think, or had been in London. And he said, you did really well on Loose Ends. Was that the first time you'd done it? And I said, you heard it? He said, yeah. And so I kind of knew he was all right. I didn't want to be associated with this attack. But nonetheless, it ironed itself out. But we'd been using it as a free rehearsal room on grounds that we were doing a show to raise money for them. So everyone felt, oh, it's not going to turn into a generic arts centre, is it? Actually, it didn't. Mm. It turned into Colchester Arts Centre, which remains the fabulous institution it is to date.
And the first Christmas Poetry Bash, how many years ago was that?
Well, it wasn't. I'd met John in very early 1991. Practically as soon as I started doing poetry, I met John in Colchester. How strange is that? I met the guy at the top of the tree, or had been. He was actually coming out of a doldrums then. He'd had his own problems at that time, and he was on his way back. You know, we did meet, and our respective partners became friends. Our respective daughters are within about 20 months of each other. And so, you know, we became quite close, really, and still are. I think what happened was we both happened to be together off on when round about coming up to Christmas, but it wasn't near Christmas, it was like the early part of Christmas. It was Johnny and Martin's Christmas at the Arts, and then it became Christmas with Johnny and Martin for a while, which is what I still call it. And then young Luke Wright, no, Ross won a competition which I ran in 96 called Boudicca's Children, to try and find young poets in the sixth form colleges, and I found one. He was about the best. There's more than a touch of John about him as well, but I thought he actually had a bit of presence. So the part of the prize was to come and support me and John to do sort of 15 minutes opening. Luke Wright, who'd been to a songwriting workshop, having seen a songwriting workshop, realised it was poetry he wanted to do, decided not to be Damon Albarn, but to be Luke Wright the poet instead. So the next year after that, there was Luke and me and Ross, and so the boys, the youngsters, who were both about 18 by now, I think, got 15 minutes each, and it got increased to 20, but they still only got about 50 quid for it until up a couple of years ago. I had to remind Anthony. And I've never found out what John gets, but neither of us get. We just do it because it just became this great gig. I think the first one with four of us may have been 1997. But it's a long time ago, so it's about 25 years.
Yeah.
A couple we've missed. One because it was COVID, and then I think we did another one where... Did we miss the set? Did we only miss one? One we did as a kind of...
We did as an online thing.
So there was... But it was a bit odd.
And it was... John wasn't there.
John was there.
John
was there, but there was one year.
Yeah.
The very last year before COVID.
Oh, no, yeah. John missed one because he was ill, didn't he?
He was really ill, and we didn't know how ill. But, you know, he didn't know how ill, but he was quite ill. He's better now. I was very sorrowful about it, because I always knew... I thought, you know, that one day one of us won't be here, and I didn't know which one it would be, because it could have been I was the first of the gang to die, because I actually had this freak brain seizure in 2013, and briefly died up there for a while. I came round. It was a brain seizure, a very serious brain seizure. It was just a freak. It wasn't anything. I'm really healthy, but I wasn't then. So I just thought it would probably be me, and I thought, oh, bloody hell. Now what? But I knew it. One day, Luke will stand up there and one of us will be gone, or both of us will be gone, I don't know.
It's become a an institution, yeah, I know. Isn't it? I mean, yeah, I think people really look for. I mean,
it
always
it's the biggest selling. It's the biggest selling gig of the year, actually.
It's
Tom,
the fastest selling gig. By an absolute mile.
Yeah, you could do a whole week of them, I think.
Well, that's it. Anthony maintains that really we should only do one because that's it. You do one, yeah, that's absolutely. What makes it a treat.
Yeah.
Can I just ask that question then?
Like you only get panettone once a year, don't you? Yeah, if you had it all year, it wouldn't be the same.
What is it, do you think, about it though? Because it's the same crowd that come. Pretty much.
I don't know.
With the exception of it, that makes them come back every year, even though, you know, it's very, you know, they know exactly it's going to be the same show, pretty much. Well, with the odd variation.
It isn't. What about the one with, did you ever see the one with the camel?
Yeah.
I mean, that was...
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, we tried.
I only missed one.
I tried to get the pantomime cow, and I said to Anthony, yeah, can you get the pantomime, can we borrow the pantomime cow if they're not using it off the Mercury? And he said, oh, I don't know, I'll ask them. They said, no, because it's a brand new cow and they don't want us messing it up. So I said, but they have got a camel. And I went, a camel? So we got the camel in, and then it was a really complicated thing. And luckily, there was a woman who was working in the staff. She was a dancer, a ballet dancer, but she knew how this thing worked. And so Luke and Ross were there, and she said this thing, one of you's got to be in the back of it, one's got to be in the front. And these levers here, this makes the eyes go clack. And this one makes the jaws go clack, clack. And this one makes the eyes blink, you know. And I looked at it, and there's Luke and Ross and his camel. Great. So John is on stage, and John doesn't know anything about this. And he's in an enhanced, blissful state, put it that way. It's all I will tactfully say. But he still did in those days. And he was out there. And I, having finished my set, led this camel out. And John was on stage holding up. And I call that one the Royale. And he suddenly becomes aware of his presence. And there's me standing there with a camel. And the camel's like blinking at him. Blinking at him. And then we led it off. Fine. He didn't miss a beat. This is where it started to fall apart. Luke and Ross then filled themselves up with drink. Or completely filling themselves up. They were now sort of about drunk. Got back in and said, let's go on for the grand finale as the camel. So, they get into the camel, and it's already looking a bit unsteady, but it's okay. And I go out, and I've got the upright piano then, not the big one. And I said, instead of doing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, I decided, because John could sing it, I thought, I could sing You Better Watch Out, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. You can do that, can't you, John? So I started just getting off, forgetting that John's a baritone, not a tenor like me. So I started in my key, and John's... Gosh,
you better watch out.
It's too low. And then he tries to get up and he can't reach it. So he's singing in the wrong key. I'm playing the piano. Then the camel starts coming out. And they decide, the stupid sods, that they ought to be a bit more professional to do a dance. They started to kick. They both kicked in the wrong direction. The camel fell over. And the head fell off. And I'm still blowing away. And John's on the mic. And it was just absolutely brilliant. But sometimes it's been really moving. We go out there at the end, and the viewer's like, thank you very much. Mm. And the applause that comes up, and the affection that comes back, it's really quite stirring. So it's very melancholy the year he didn't turn up. I thought I was going to cry. I thought, bloody hell, supposing he doesn't come back. I thought, that was really terrible.
But he's in fine fettle now,
isn't
he?
So. Yeah, he is, And then Luke and Ross said, but this is the first time it'd be me and John. So I expect we'll be doing slightly extended sets. Yeah, the old Arts Centre. I've seen some really good stuff there. I once reviewed a gig there, sitting on the stage typing, in a Burberry trench coat, like an old journalist. Because Giles Smith, who was then the reviewer for the Essex County Standard, was actually doing a gig, and they wanted it reviewed, or it could be reviewed, but they would want the review in to the office at midnight. So I went there and sat on the stage the whole time they played the gig, reviewing the gig as they played it on the stage with a little portable typewriter going clackety clack, clack, clack. Put the whole thing into an envelope, checked it, put the thing into an envelope and just walked along the road and put it into it when they had their office in on North Hill. Mm. Posted it through the door and they ran it. So that was... There were many memorable things that have happened there. Like Captain Sensible was doing a gig, Dead Men Walking, with Slim Jim from the Stray Cats. Mm. Mike Peters from Ear Alarm and Kirk Brandon from Spear of Destiny. And they were ringing, and he just said, do you want to come along to this gig? A phone call. I went, yeah. I just stood backstage and watched that. That was so many hits. And once, John Hegley, who had forgotten, that's a famous story, John Hegley, who's a friend of mine, had forgotten to come to the gig. And Anthony rang him up and said, are you all right? And John was sort of in his slippers at home, I think. He said, bloody hell, I better get in the car. So he gets in the car and he did the gig, but it was a bit late. So he said to everybody, come back and do a freebie. Be a freebie in the middle of the week. And I was here with Lily. I think it might have been half term or something. I said, I'll tell you what, Lily, would you like to go and see someone else who does the same job as me who's also got a 9-year-old daughter? And she said, yeah, all right. So we got in the cab. And we went to see, and I went to the dressing room and she met John Hegley. And, you know, he's like, said, see, this is John. He also does the same job as me and John. So it's not just us who do it, you know.
And the Golden Afternoons, where did that guy come from and when did that first start?
It started in 2003.
Yeah.
Because I was 50.
Right.
And I was very melancholic. I can't remember why. I think there'd been an affair of the heart that had gone wrong or something had finished like that. Mm. And I was generally having a battle with myself. And I thought, if I never do a concert again, I should, because I was very much still mostly a poet then. Mm. I thought, I should go and do a concert. So I thought I'd do this last concert, The Golden Afternoon, and play all the songs. Some of the songs from The Greatest Hymn in England, all, you know, just play them. And it was filmed, of course. There's a film of it. No, but I didn't expect to do it again. Then the next year I did it again, and I've done it most years. I take a couple of years off sometimes, just depends. I think the Colchester Arts Centre is my favourite venue in all the world.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
I'm glad, yeah. I mean, that would be the trail that we'll run.
So many good nights there, but both watching, seeing gigs and doing them, genuinely moving things when I've come off stage. I just thought, well, that was all right.
Well, what was the kind of most moving thing recently?
I don't know, a lot of the Christmas ones really are.
Yeah.
And sometimes the Golden Afternoon, less the Golden Afternoon, but more the Christmas ones. They are really magical sometimes. You just feel it.
Thank you to Martin for being such an entertaining host and a wonderful storyteller. Coming up next is a new feature called Mick's Picks, in which Mick, the resident guru, picks some of the highlight for the upcoming month. Mick's Picks are like a celestial flying teapot ride around a patchouli-scented galaxy, guaranteed to bring wonder and open the doors of perception.
Right, Mick's Picks for December. Well, one of them has to be the boss. Christmas Carol. He's doing it at Colchester Castle. He's doing it at the Mayor's Parlour. He's doing it at the Arts Centre, I have to say, all this stuff, because, well, it's him and he'll shoot me if I don't. Other than that, really, for this month, for the kids, but for the parents as well, we have our ongoing Widdershins Theatre. Andy comes every year. He's a stunning puppeteer. He builds delightful puppets. He will drag you in. Come and watch him.
Nina joined Colchester Arts Centre director Dr. Anthony Roberts ahead of the publication of his first book, Never Knowingly Understood, and Nina began by asking him how it felt to become a published author.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I didn't think the idea of having a book on the shelf with your name on it is kind of like, it's a bit weird really, and it's not like I've written a book as such, but this book is a compilation of the articles, the weekly articles I write that appear in the Gazette and the Standard every week.
And what kind of thing do you write about in your articles?
Well, I would say it is probably best defined as tittle-tattle, really, or just like nothing fluff. And in a way, that's kind of like by necessity, because there's nothing very interesting happens in my life. But it also tries to just deliberately be slightly different in tone from what you usually get in a local newspaper, because it's usually very formulaic.
Yeah.
And so my favourite sort of writers would be people like, I really like P.G. Wodehouse, and I wouldn't want to kind of like myself, but it's more like writing about the inconsequential ways that are familiar.
Yeah.
So like, you know, how we all get pissed off with call centres.
Yeah.
I've written about that. And,
so do you draw your kind of inspiration from your real life experiences?
Yeah, definitely. My family is quite a rich source of, And no one in my family reads it, I realise. Yeah. So it gives you a free rein to yeah. write whatever you want about it.
Well, that's great, yeah. isn't it? You've got a whole yeah. wealth of material yeah. there that you can be assured they'll never have to read.
It was probably one, I met someone at my poetry show that I did in the Fringe.
Yeah.
And he said, I'll read your column. And I said, well, that always surprised me for a start, yeah. anyway. And he said, gosh, your wife must think of you. And I was thinking, well, she never reads it. Yeah.
And thank you there to Dr. Anthony Roberts. And I'm sure that book will be on everybody's Christmas list this year. I also managed to push Anthony briefly out of his office, where I was joined by Lillian Lewis from the band The Meths, here backstage at Colchester Arts Centre. And I started by asking Lillian Lewis how the band first came together.
So, that was 3 years ago in June, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, it was just after, it was about days after I came back from Download Festival, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like weeks before you found out I was a drummer, mm-hmm. knew you on and off, I used to see you on and off in a pub I worked at, and then we were like, you wanted to start a new punk project, mm-hmm. and I was game the moment Lily told me the inspiration she had, like the bands that she was into,
because
they were all punk bands that I love. So from like X-Ray Spix, Sham 69, The Clash, the list goes on.
Yeah, that's spot on.
Yeah.
You said it all, that's it. I haven't got to say anything.
Interview
now.
Over.
Done.
It's done.
That's it.
So kind of you started, and then not that many months after, we went into lockdown. So did that kind of bring everything to a grinding halt? Or?
It did, I mean, it did to some extent, because we only had about 6 months to get a first demo out and get...
It probably helped that within the first hour we ever practiced together, we pretty much wrote 3 songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which are on the record. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And which ones were...
Budget Luxury.
Your English is great. And What Do You Expect?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We played all of those at the weekend.
They were your sort of like your ideas that you had written down on your guitar and... Yeah, in an hour we basically came out with pretty much the whole instrumental layout of those 3 songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we went for a pint after across the road and just went, yeah, this has to happen.
Excellent. Yeah.
No, right. Yeah. It did.
And had you both been kind of like playing for a while, or I mean, you know.
You had, hadn't you?
Yeah, I was in a band before. Who played the Art Centre?
Yeah, which band was that then?
That was Horrible Dolphins.
Okay.
So we played here before. But yeah, that was sort of, that came to a natural end, I'd say, like, because the person I was playing with before, yeah, just got to the point they didn't particularly want a gig outside of our local area. Yeah. And I wanted to, you know, play Brixton Academy and Wembley Arena. So, do you know what I mean? That balance has gone. And then Lewis was like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, do anything. Yeah. I'll play anywhere. Yeah. Love it.
And kind of skipping forward to like this year, it's really, everything's kind of happening, isn't it, for you at the moment?
Considering we've had that big gap of COVID, it's just like, wow.
Yeah, it's just kicked off.
What the hell's happening?
Yeah.
Bloody excited.
Yeah. So you've got Download next year?
Yes, yeah. We have. We've got Download. Lewis has had this grin ever since we got to announce it. The weight wasn't lifted, it just got more and more and more.
I went there in 2010 and I fell in love with that place.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've gone there every year since. And I kept saying I'll go there every year until I die, but to be able to actually play there is just, I don't know, I can't say it.
I can imagine. It's
it's going to kick in 10 times harder when it actually comes to the time. But yeah. Yeah.
He's going to learn a drum solo, like, especially for it, aren't you? A 10-minute drum solo.
I'm going to have some sort of, like, aneurysm.
You'll have to have, like, a revolving drum cage. Yeah, just like, yeah, for kind of, like, yeah, Download.
Definitely.
Oh, no.
And is that, I mean, when you get there and you go on stage, mm-hmm. what sort of capacity crowds are we talking about?
I don't know. When the stage are on, I couldn't tell. I'm not sure either, actually.
It's going to be thousands.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's going to be thousands.
The last band I watched there last year was, like, they packed the tent out and it was loads in there. Loads.
Yeah, yeah.
Plenty.
Yeah. Excellent stuff.
So, yeah, we've got, how many months have we got to try and build up a big enough fan base to try and pack it out?
Yeah, yeah. Got about 6 months, so that's the task. And it's going to happen, like, it's my question.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, so many people don't want to, like, friends in that as well. You know, buy even just day tickets just so they can watch us play. And, yeah.
Yeah.
Buzzing for that.
Big.
And you've got, I mean, you've got a big fan base. I mean, in terms of, you know, there's always people on kind of like social media and I came to the last gig that you did here.
Ah, great.
Which was your, well, I was on the bar.
Yeah.
Of course.
And that was your first time you headlined here?
Yes. First time I headlined.
And
still the best gig we've ever had.
Yeah, it's the best gig we've ever done.
By far.
Yeah, like easily.
It was, yeah. We knew it was going to be a good turnout. We didn't realise it was going to be, you know, pretty much capacity turnout.
Yeah.
Considering, like, you know, what do we sell in the morning? It was like 250.
Yeah.
And then, it was pretty much 100 walk-ins. A good 100 odd walk-ins came. But we prepped for a show, like for a turnout like that, didn't we?
We prepped with
the intro video that we'd done, and we went down a tree.
Never
come on stage like that before. We were sort of watching your video, but you could hear the crowd. You can't see them, but you could hear them.
And you can hear everyone.
I was like, okay, this feels big.
Everyone like screaming up the meths, and then you get on stage, and you're like, it's like we were saying the other day. It sort of feels easier to play to a bigger crowd than it does when like no one comes, for example. Yeah. So when you're starting out and you're getting like really small crowds, it's great. But it's when you get a big crowd, you're like, I'm performing tonight.
You have to work harder for a small crowd,
don't you?
You really have to, like, if it's a smaller venue, you've got to really work it. But you've got a crowd like that.
they're doing the work.
We didn't put any effort in, but I just felt so more at ease.
Yeah.
And excited, and I jumped up on the drum riser, didn't I? A couple of bottles of beer, raised them up
like a rock star.
For the record, I'm holding my hands up. And then the lights just shone up on the whole crowd, and they, I just went, "Whoa!" I was like, no, "See you later."
And that was brilliant. And you're here again, New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
So this is a later show, isn't it? I think the doors are opening at 9.
Doors at 9. 9 till 2.
Are we playing into the new year?
I think we are. We're playing into the new year.
Okay.
Interesting.
So we're going to see people into their new year.
Yeah.
That's big, isn't it?
That is big.
You've got to try and think of things to do for that.
I've got some ideas.
You've got some stuff up your sleeve.
I've already got, I think I've mentioned it before.
And we're going to get like a blow up like recliner chair.
Okay.
If there is such a thing. Put Lewis in it and crowd surf him to the back.
Okay.
Take a pint to the sound guy and then come back in. And then he's got to come back on, jump back on the drums, like before like the next song starts. That's the plan. And that's AJ from Black Cactus who gave me that idea.
That's when everyone realised when the drums are still playing, I'll be faking it the whole time.
So an inflatable chair.
To the back, to the sound guy, to say, here's your drink, come back all the way,
I think that could work, definitely.
Get a kid up on stage to get on the drums for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Just to hit the drum, done.
Break them.
We've got to do it now because we've said it.
You're committed to it. It's going to be out there.
Yeah.
Whenever this edited, isn't it?
No.
That'll be the first thing. It'll be
the headline, isn't it?
You know, we've had the footballs previously.
Yeah,
so
true.
If I'm doing that, I'm wearing a crown.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. You're kind of leading yourself into a lot of things.
It's all
going to
happen.
Sugar.
And I mean. The Arts Centre then, so, I mean, are you kind of both local or...?
Yeah, both.
Is it somewhere that you've been to many times over the years?
We've seen quite a few bands here, haven't we?
My first ever gig was here with my dad to see Anthrax. It was absolutely packed out to the door, it was so sweaty, and I remember then my dad was like, oh, we'll stand at the side, do you know what I mean? We'll stand at the side. And I remember watching him thinking, wow, this is mad. I want to do that. Like, I want to be there.
I'd love to remember what my first time here was, though.
What was your favourite time?
There was a couple. I mean, but back in 2009 or 10, I was massively into Hatebreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they played Days After My Birthday.
Nice.
And I would not stop listening to them. I was going to the gym a lot as well, so they were like my gym music as well. That was massive for me. But then there was also Atreyu, who I'd missed at the first download I ever went to, but they actually played on my birthday at the Arts Centre.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of related to my birthday.
It's meant to
them two are very memorable, but yeah, I've seen some great bands here.
And kind of my... you said a little bit about kind of like influences and stuff. So if I were to ask you on the spot,
I can never think of the obvious answer. No, it doesn't matter. There's no right or wrong.
So if I were to say to you, and it, you know, it can be anything, any genre, five favourite songs.
I can't do it. You'll get inspiration. Oh, maybe.
I'm going to go Ammo on the Sniffers, Gacked on Anger. I'm going to go probably something like Identity by X-Ray Specs.
Yeah.
Not the obvious, obvious.
That's a good one.
I'd say The Distillers.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with something like... What's it going to be?
I do. I've just got all these like words flying around my brain right now. Nothing. It's just like connecting. It's just words and pictures. I don't know.
Something like Distillers, definitely. That's, I love The Distillers. Yeah. Something from Sing Sing Death House.
Don't feel pressurised.
You'd be surprised. I'm quite eclectic.
I love
my punk and my heavy rock, but you know, I'm also into, well, no, mostly rock, but
yeah,
you know, I sort of grew up on the Spice Girls, love it.
What was the first gig you ever went to?
Proudly, even though I didn't want to go, and then I was being a sport brat, and I ended up going. Was this Club 7 at Wembley Arena?
Excellent. We're definitely keeping that there.
Yeah, that was a parents. I've got a younger sister. And they thought, yeah, well, she wanted to go. I said no. And then they suddenly gave the ticket to my friend who lived like 2 miles. And suddenly I was like, oh, I want to go now.
Yeah.
My friend's going. So my dad had to buy another ticket. Spoiled bugger. Did not enjoy it.
Oh, you didn't?
Okay.
Not really.
It was
great.
I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. Spice Girls. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And what was your first gig then, Lily? What was
the Anthrax here.
That was the first one here. First ever gig.
I must have been about, I reckon I was about 12 at the time.
Right, okay.
I remember being young. 12 probably looked about 15 or 16, so I don't know at all. But I used to go to the guitar show in London at the XL Centre.
Yeah.
When I was even younger than that. And used to get like Bruce Dickinson and Maiden and that played like every year. Therapy played, who are playing here as well. So,
back here again soon, yeah.
So a lot of the old sort of hard rock stuff, but that was never like something I loved.
Yeah.
But Anthrax is another level, because Anthrax were like that crossover thrashy, hardcore.
Yeah.
And I like that sort of stuff, so.
I think I was gradually building up. My old man, apart from the meths now, he basically listens to nothing but Rod Stewart. He's got like every single, just hundreds of Rod Stewart CDs with the meths at the top of the pile.
Of course, yeah.
So I was then went to see Rod Stewart after that, and I've been to see Rod Stewart about 5 or 6 times. I love Rod Stewart. But I think I was gradually working my way up from there. And then I started like listening to quite a bit of punk in my early teens.
Yeah.
And then I managed to go to the Isle of Wight in 2008, the Isle of Wight Festival, and saw Iggy Pop.
Nice.
And then Sex Pistols headlining that night as well. And Sex Pistols was mental. Iggy Pop was great. It was kind of like dampened by, in between was an Ian Brown solo set. So everyone's energy was high for Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Watching him, even at his age, he was running around energetic as anything. And then, and then Ian Brown was sending me to sleep. So I was down the front waiting for Sex Pistols to come on.
Oh, and then
it all kicked off again. It was brilliant.
Nice.
And did, because I saw when they reformed, I saw them at the Finsbury Park show they did in 96, and when they came and they played Bodies,
right,
the ground was actually, it was vibrating, because it was, you know.
That was probably one of the songs that used to fuel me more than anything as well.
Yeah.
That song used to really make me just go crazy. I love it.
Yes. Frank Turner. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? Because has he produced? So you've got one EP out now,
yes.
Or kind of like a six track.
Yeah, we've got a 6-track Broken Britain Part 1.
Did he beg us to leave us? Well, we was like, mess.
Yeah,
literally. Just leave us be.
Yeah,
yeah. Just
fucking relax. It's COVID.
We had to jump at the chance.
Yeah,
knowing he's quite local. Bit of a legend, man. Yeah.
He's extremely down to earth, isn't he?
He's very down to earth.
But we emailed him, like, because it was COVID, obviously he wasn't touring at the time because the tours were all cancelled.
Yeah.
So we knew that his tour had been cancelled. We knew he'd worked with another band locally.
Yeah.
And I was like, shall I just email him? And I normally go to Lewis and I'm like, does it sound a bit desperate or does it sound all right? And you're like, no, just do it, mate. Just do it. So I'm like, all right.
I say that, but when Lily asked me to do it, I'm like, no, I can't do it. No, I can't ask him this. I feel bad.
But I always know if I get, like, the approval of Lewis, I'm like, right, that's it. Is it all good? Because then I can say, well, Lewis told me to.
Yeah, she doesn't realise I've got automatic template. Yeah. What's that? Go for it.
Oh, I knew it. You say to me every time.
I mean, did you know him beforehand, before you emailed him then?
To be fair, we didn't know him, but before we recorded with him, we played Lost Evenings, which is his festival.
Got ya.
So we played that at the Roundhouse, didn't we?
Pet Needs as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
We've obviously done a lot with him.
So that sort of started with that, didn't it?
We
just recorded a couple of songs.
Lost Evenings went really well as well, didn't it?
Yeah, Lost Evenings went down a storm.
We recorded with a couple of songs with Billy, didn't we? Billy Dunn from the Subways.
Yeah.
No, brilliant. But he was right over the other side of half a shit.
Oh, okay.
It was definitely a trek for
but
that.
But I don't know, Frank was a no-brainer. We had to go for it, didn't we?
We had to.
I'm double glad we did because amazing bloke. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah, amazing producer.
Did the sound? Did you feel your kind of sound had changed or developed, or did you learn? I suppose you do from anyone, don't you?
It was always like that. That was it, our first demo. We wanted to get songs out there.
Yeah.
On. Like soddle money, basically. We've done it all so quickly. We recorded a day, not too fussed about how it's not really the sound we're going for, but you know, just get it out there. And we're lucky because COVID then attacked us with, you know, not long after. If we'd have waited, God knows where we'd be now.
Yeah.
If we'd have waited, we wouldn't have had anything out there. We'd have nothing recorded. So I'm kind of glad. So the second recording album is always going to be a bit more what we want as for the sound.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. He sort of helped along with that as well, because there were little ideas where he was like, maybe like if I try this, like I'm not going to give away like everything, but on some songs there's like a shaker the whole way through the song.
Yeah.
And you don't even hear when you first listen, but when it's not there, you notice.
You notice it's not there.
Just coming up the idea. My automatic template was going off again. Yeah, go for it, mate.
But Lewis actually got COVID like part way through. After the first day of recording.
Oh really?
Lewis was like, guys, I'm like, I'm positive. So me and Frank essentially isolated.
Test.
Yeah.
I did a gig in London. I went to watch a bit of the Sniffers in London
before,
and everyone was going on about how they got COVID from it.
And
I was feeling a bit like tired and like a bit fatigued. I wasn't feeling ill.
No.
But I thought, I'd done that day of drum recordings, which was the first session. And then, next morning I thought, I'll do a test. I've got one sitting here. Bang, positive. Bugger. I was like, sod it. Luckily, I'd got my drums out of the way, luckily, there weren't much left for me to do, so we came back to that a few weeks later, didn't we?
And do you think, like, more now, maybe, than in recent times, this really strikes a chord with what you're trying to kind of convey in your lyrics? And because the music's very energetic, it's very, and people love it. I mean, having witnessed the other gig here before, but there's also some very kind of strong messages within your lyrics.
Yeah.
This is basically us two, isn't it? So it's like you and your strong, me and my crazy energy.
Put them together.
Combined.
What do you get?
Yeah.
Magic. Planet.
Do you think there's kind of, I don't know, without getting too kind of, within society, maybe people are too accepting of things around them?
Yeah. With our lyrics, so I write the lyrics essentially for this, and generally that's because I'm writing every day. So I've said this in an interview before, like, there isn't a day goes by where I'm not thinking of something, and it's generally at the wrong, completely inappropriate time, and it will come to my head. I'm constantly writing about what I'm seeing, like, literally that's it, what I'm seeing, or what's happening, or what's happened to me, or what's happened to Lewis, whatever it might be, and it just makes me like angry, and generally comes out in the form of a song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like people are afraid. I think nowadays people are a little bit afraid to stand out because of social media and like the backlash you get. Because there's a lot more backlash. A lot of people will say to you online that they wouldn't say to your face. So I understand why people don't want to speak out as much. But I think with the people that listen to our music, they are people who are quite happy to
like-minded.
And if they're not, they certainly are by the time they leave a gig.
Yeah.
Because they get the message, and that's really important to us. I think that people don't just get the energy, but they actually get what we're talking about, because it's important stuff.
Yeah.
Like we want to change, don't we? We want to change society.
Little by little.
Thank you to Lily and Lewis, otherwise known as the Meth, and don't forget to get your ticket for their New Year's Eve show, which promises to be the best way to welcome in 2023. Thanks for tuning in, and please don't forget to subscribe and join in the conversation on our social media pages. To check out the listings, just go to colchesterartscentre.com and click the podcast link to keep regularly updated. Join us next month for more exciting news of forthcoming events and exclusive interviews. And if I'm on the door or the bar, please come and say hello. After all, we are a lovely bunch of people.